Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Shade the Blue Soccer Show. This is Thad Bell from thebluetestament.com. Right now I'm on by myself. I expect a guest to be joining me here momentarily. Well, he didn't get held up, but just for to kill a couple minutes, hopefully less than that. Sporting has done fairly well so far this season. 3 wins, 1 loss. The 1 loss coming at home, but the last win being on the road at New York, when without Matt Beisler, without Brad Davis, and they still managed to go into New York and get the victory, despite having been outpossessed, outpassed by New York. Guest I'm having on the show today, actually it looks like he's just joined. Robo, is that you?
That's me. Hi, Thad. How are you?
I'm doing good. I was just doing a little rambling until you joined, but for the people who will listen to this eventually, my guest is Rob Thompson, who is the Executive Vice President of Communications and Digital for Sporting Kansas City. I think I got your title fairly close.
That's a mouthful, yeah.
But for people who don't know him, most people call him Robo that actually know him. But you've been with the organization off and on, but pretty close to the beginning. You joined like in 97, I believe?
That's correct. I joined in 1997. I came straight from living in the Cayman Islands I always loved sports and loved writing. I moved back to Kansas City where I was born and raised and went down to Hunt Sports Group one day with a pretty sparse resume in hand and waited a long time to speak with the directory and saw the president at the time was a guy named Tim Connolly, and the vice president was a man named John Wagner. And so I thought, Tim's probably really busy, so I'll just meet with this John Wagner. I went to the front desk to say I wanted to talk to them. They said, well, what time's your appointment? I said, I didn't have one. They reminded me that's not really how it works, but if I wanted to wait, I could see if he had time, and that was about a little before 8 a.m., and around 4 p.m. or 4:30, somewhere in that time frame, John Wagner came out and asked if I'd waited there all day. I said, yep, so I went back and talked to him. We had a great conversation, and the next day I was working at the Kansas City, then just-turned Wizards, so... it was now John Wagner was ended up being the president of Hunt Sports Group and worked intimately with the with FC Dallas and Columbus Crew for years and now still works for Hunt Sports. So small world. So I still run into John a lot at a lot of league functions and we always have a little nice little joke about that interview 19 years ago.
That does show that patience pays off then, doesn't it?
That's right. So I will say that there's been a lot of change from that day till today, on and off the field, certainly.
Well, that's part of why I wanted to have you on, because I mean you've had a inside look from the old days when it was pretty sparse of pretty much everything, sometimes fans, and to now when Sporting is packing the stadium for 70 some odd straight games, it's a pretty amazing turnaround, and you've had that inside seat from the get-go, pretty much. I know you left for a couple of years, but you've been there for all the MLS Cups, all but one Open Cup. You've been there for pretty much all the major history of Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the sellouts, and I know we always try to celebrate the sellouts, and which is it's great. I would think it's the overall. Where we are in the landscape of sports and entertainment and just culture here of the city and the fabric of the city and the amount of memories we bring for people and families and whomever they're with. I mean, I think those are stuff that's really important. I think at the beginning, people came to the games and enjoyed it, but not necessarily really caring what the score was and just having a nice night at the then Arrowhead Stadium we played at, it's much different now. It's not only is it a viable business, but we also evoke a lot of emotions, you know, and winning is paramount for us as a business and as an organization, but it's also we want that for our fans too. We're all in this together, and winning winning is much more fun than losing, I've learned in the 19 years. Pretty profound statement, but you know, I think that just where we are and where we're headed and still this, with a very high ceiling is exciting. It's an exciting time for soccer and an exciting time for Kansas City, certainly.
It just came out in an article recently that MLS basically had folded in 2001. It was basically the paperwork was done and Lamar walked back in and said, no, let's keep it going and basically saved the league at that point to give us the opportunity to be where we're at now. Do you remember those dark days when it was that bad?
I do. I mean, it was. So we had contracted a couple teams already, in Tampa Bay being one, and it was in Miami being another one, and it was just a tougher time. And I know that when Commissioner Garber came about around that time in 2001, I mean, he had even mentioned that Kansas City was a market to be heavily looked at. Of contraction, and you know, fast forward to a couple years ago, and Commissioner Garber also said that we were the best success story in MLS history, if not sports history, which is pretty fantastic because it's I think that's accurate. But it was we had three owners who did a great job, unbelievable job of keeping this league afloat in the early run, and had such great faith and vision of that. We had at that time one soccer specific stadium in Columbus Crew Stadium. Which is much different now, is being a trendsetter of the stadiums you see across the United States currently. But something had to change, and I think it was just part of it was patience. Part of it was again, the Hunt family being really stepping up and really being visionaries in what they did and knew. Lamar all along had told us. I mean, Lamar was my boss, for many years, and he always said these will turn into fans. These groups of young kids that play. I mean, he always mentioned the per capita youth soccer participation in our city compared to being tops in the United States. And these are going to turn into soccer fans. And he's right, because now we're looking at those fans as who exactly we market to currently today. Those kids that are playing youth soccer 19 years ago, 20 years ago. That's who we try to hit, and that's who really is the lifeblood of our stadium, chanting and cheering and doing so much for us. And so he was prophetic in that statement.
Yeah, and I totally agree. It's funny to me because I was at that first game 20 years ago, and I'll be there tomorrow night. God willing, everything goes right. But I know I've talked to a lot of people like, hey, did you go to that first game? They're like, no, I was two.
Right.
But they grew up playing. They grew up with the team being here. And even though they may have only went to one or two games at a time then, it laid that groundwork for, them being the crazy people in the cauldron waving the flags and chanting all game.
I mean, I think we've always we've been very fortunate to always have a good relationship with our fans, always listening and whatnot. And really, with this new ownership group, really taking their comments and suggestions and anything else to heart and utilizing them and again, being inclusive and part of this of one big team has been important. So again, we're not anything without our fans, and we recognize that and appreciate that every single day, both from the player side and the coach's side and the front office side and everything else. We would never ever take that for granted. I mean, that is without fans there would be no sports. So we certainly would do anything to appreciate that and cultivate that.
Being a outsider looking at the job you guys have done, it's been pretty amazing turnaround from, the days when we left Arrowhead, when the team was up for sale, moving to Cab. But it seems like there was this plan in place that once Sporting Park opened, now Children's Mercy Park, that everything went into high gear of being able to bring those fans in and engage them. How much fun was that to be like part of that planning and then seeing it start to actually happen?
Well, the fan experience is something that we hear from our principal owners of Neil Patterson and especially Cliff Illig, who is very big on the Disney model of fan experience. So that's always going to be paramount and imperative for us and vital to what we do. You know, from charting out from when they design the stadium to where, when you park, and from when, the time you park to the time you get to your seats in the stadium and the time you leave, what that experience is like from beginning to end. And we've actually tried to even go further and you know, with No Other Pub and some other outside endeavors we have to, you know, and adding in technology and apps and everything else, really trying to see how far we can go with this. So that part is really exciting. I mean, I would say that, you know, I think that this all started really, you know, with the ownership group, because but prior to that, we had a front office staff between, you know, between 8 and 15, which would fluctuate every year from the beginning stages. And that's hard to be proactive with. We were trying to run a professional sports team, a major league professional sports team, with limited resources and limited employees. We're just trying to keep our heads above water. We were all working crazy hours for the love of the game and love of the sport and love of the city, but you really couldn't get to doing much of what you wanted to do besides trying to stay afloat. So, you know, now you circle up, now we have, you know, 4 graphic designers on staff. We have 5 videographers. We have three people in the merchandise department. We had positions that we wouldn't even think fathomable back then. You know, we didn't even have, you know, we'd have, you know, 1 operations person, 1 PR person. You know, we had a couple of salespeople. We had 1 new salesperson. I mean, it was just a very bare bones operation to what we can. So there's much more we can do now. We have the ability now with resources to be proactive in the market. But, you know, a big turning point for us, obviously, was the stadium and the rebrand. But prior to that was playing Manchester United at Arrowhead in 2010. And that was a really springboard, because we knew there were soccer fans in Kansas City. We just didn't know really where they were, how to reach them. And we didn't know that at that time the dichotomy between liking soccer and liking the then Wizards. There was a disconnect. And everything we tried to do in our marketing and our communications and all of our strategy was how to connect our fans and team to our players. And so, you know, there's a lot of red that day at Arrowhead in July, and it was a competitive game on the field, including, you know, Jimmy Conroy getting a red card midway through the first half and still playing with 10 men. So when we, you know, when Davey Arnault scored the first goal and they got a PK to tie it up, and then Kide scored, it was an unbelievable feeling. The fans started reversing course a little bit. You know, all the people wearing red were now cheering for their hometown team and getting more pride for that. And that kept getting growing and growing. And I remember going down, because back then it was right when I think the press box was moved up higher at Arrowhead, and so we were really blocked off to feeling or seeing or hearing anything. So I went down to the field to experience it, and there's just the noise level is just different than you'd heard. It was people were excited, people were proud, and then to hold on for that win, it was really just our players were so excited, and we knew it was something special. We knew it was a great feeling, but we didn't really know until the next day, and our phones were ringing off the hook. So we were gathering all this information from people, you know, that hadn't been to a game in years or really paid much attention. That was really a big step, followed up by then the rebrand, building the stadium and announcing those plans, et cetera. So it was a snowball effect, but I would also say that our business model and our mantra and philosophy aligned right with the market we were really heavily involved with, the millennials at the time, which we didn't know that was what they're called in 2010, 11-ish. But we, you know, we were accessible. We were authentic. We used the word local a lot. With our local ownership group, and these are all buzzwords for millennials. Transparency, I mean, we go on and on of how you did that. And this is also the time of social media boom. So the way we communicate on Twitter, you, led by Rob Heineman, who was very transparent, and all these things just played into each other. And you know, you can't really call it luck, because I believe you make your own luck. But all these forces pulled together in the right direction and created what we now have, which is a great product and a great stadium and the best fans in the league.
And one of the things I've admired of what you guys have done, I mean, you capitalized on that success of the Manchester United game, but like a little bit later in the wintertime when Kai invited everybody to a snowball fight, you guys promoted it. You didn't like, oh my God, we don't want a player to get hurt or something. You guys jumped into it and said, hey, this is a great thing. It's involving the community. We had the snow day Snowmageddon or Snowpocalypse or whatever it was called that day.
Right.
And, you know, a couple hundred fans came out and played soccer in the snow and sledded and had a snowball fight and went to Chipotle.
So that was, you're right. That was great. And that was organic. And that was from Kai. So that, again, people that back then didn't know how to utilize social media and at the time Twitter, you know, and that was an unbelievable case study of that, you know, followed up with, Ocho Cinco, afterwards. So we got national recognition, when Ocho Cinco wanted to play, and then we were his adopted team, and he came into to camp, and Peter Vermes, you know, who's not he's a very serious person. He's lighthearted and fun, but he's, you know, on the field, he's serious. So this was not a PR stunt for Peter. He wanted to see if this athlete could play soccer. So, you know, it was a good week that he was in town, but that helped us in the social media realms, certainly. You know, and so we started increasing numbers and doing these other things. So that, again, that set a tone for us, and our engagement in social media blows any team in this area out of the water, and certainly in MLS, that, you know, maybe not the numbers per se, but the total overall engagement, you know, because we have all original, authentic followers. So, you know, that's we've cultivated that relationship, and really are proud of that.
Yeah, and you guys should be. I believe you've won multiple awards from MLS at the end of the year for, you know, the communication, the social media aspects. I don't know what all those categories were, but I know I've seen you guys win pretty much every year for the last several years, something. And that's something that you got to be proud of, because you've been overseeing a lot of that.
Yeah, of course you're always proud. I mean, anyone that says they're not proud to win awards is probably not telling the truth, but we don't take much stock in that. I would say that I think the one year we didn't win was 2012, maybe, and I thought that was our best year we had. So those things are all they're great to win, but you don't put too much stock in that, because I promise you one thing: we don't sit back on our laurels and say, "Look what we've done." We are a group that moves forward and always wants to push the bar and do different things, and you know, we get mad when you run out of time on at the end of the day on some stuff, because you. We always want to do more. So, you know, I think the people in this group in our office like to work hard and are passionate. And you know, I know when I look to bring people on board in my department, that's what I look for. I never look at resumes. I mostly look at the character and the personality and then play to their strengths when they come work here. So, but one common thing is they love sporting. They have a passion for that. So it doesn't feel like work ever any day here. You know, it's your livelihood, and that's the way it should be.
No, and not sucking up to you, but I think you've done a fantastic job with that. I've dealt with other teams around the league and U.S. soccer and other soccer leagues and stuff like that, and you guys are pretty much the best ones to work with consistently on a day-in, day-out basis. So I appreciate it from the media side. You guys, I mean, even from what I do, you embraced blogs early. I mean, you treated us as media. You found us as another outlet to get the message out. And that was innovative back when I first started doing something with you guys.
Well, yeah, we appreciate that. I mean, I think that, yeah, anyone wants to – we embrace anyone that wants to cover the team. And we don't – you know, more and more each year we become comfortable in our skin of you know, who we are. And I know that if – you know, early in my career, if I would have gotten a negative article, I would have been really mad. But now there's a way to – you know, sometimes negative can generate discussion, and that can end up being a positive thing. So, I think that there's a way to manage that. But, we have a lot of high school bloggers that we're like probably the only team that would allow that into a press box, because we understand the importance of that. And who's for us to say that these younger generation can't come out and cover something? I mean, I don't know why there would be an age restriction on a press box, which there is. And we kind of turn an eye to that, a blind eye to that, because that's the next generation of people covering the sport. So as I said, we embrace that, certainly.
No, again, I think that's pretty good. Not pretty good, it's damn good. We've covered the fact that you guys have done an amazing job on a turnaround, and I don't know how much time you have to donate to this today, so I want to at least get a couple of, like, old stories from you. You know, what's some of the – I know, you know, having been there for MLS Cups have to be pretty special, but I know they got to be stressful for you and doing all that work. But what, besides something like that, what are some memories that, you know, you dealing with players or coaches or whatever that just make you feel, you know, happy to look back on those days?
Right. Oh, man, there's so many. It sounds cliche. There's so many. But the relationships you build because you are part of the team. I mean, you're right earlier. I worked from 97 through 01. I was left from 02 through 06 and was hired in 06 again and was the first hire back for the new ownership group. So, I was with the team the whole time and I was, I was not married. I didn't have a family. So, you're always at training, you're always on the road, you're always with them. And so you're certainly a part of that group. Sharing all these experiences of a new league and trying to make your way and figuring out what that means. And, you know, we had high highs and low lows in those times, you know, starting with, you know, you had an 8-24 year in 1999, followed by Supporters Shield MLS Cup in 2000. So you've seen, you know, you saw every end of the spectrum. I remember in 98, some of the memories you have is, you know, we weren't a big draw on the road. And back then we probably played we played Wednesday, Saturday, it seemed like most of the year because the season was a lot shorter than it is now. And so the Beach Boys would play after most of our games somehow. It was like the promotion that the league had helped with. And so anyone that wanted the Beach Boys could have them. And it seemed like every road team that when we'd go there, that's the game they selected to play. So I saw the Beach Boys, I think, 12 or 13 times in one season, which is kind of absurd stat that I felt like I was just falling around the Beach Boys. But, preseasons, you know, because back then we were gone for, you know, 5 to 6 weeks, you know, in the same spot. So you have to find things to do, so you just get to know people so well if you're just in such close quarters and proximity for that long. I mean, I still have lots of friends from back then and still keep in touch with, you know, hundreds of players over the years. But, the best memories are, I'll start with the coaches. I mean, we had three predominant coaches in Ron Newman, who was fantastic and hilarious and loyal to a T, and always saw the bright spot in things, when he left in the first, after the first four games in the 1999 season, what people don't know is that I was his assistant was Guy Newman, so Guy took a little time off too. So we were really had only left a guy named Ken Fogarty. So I was the assistant to Ken for a couple games, including one game in Miami. It was a noon kickoff, exactly 12:00 kickoff. So I was wearing a suit. It was an outdoor, it was at Locker Stadium, so it was just a. The locker rooms weren't really were there. So Ken Fogarty stayed in the locker room to kind of go over the game plan. So I wanted to go to the field to help warm up the team. Well, I didn't know I was coaching. I thought I was just going to be working in the press box. So I'm on the field laying balls off and crossing balls in a suit and whatnot. And looked pretty silly, I'm sure. And then right before warm-ups ended and the lineups were being announced to start the game, the last thing I did was to help Chris Snicko was starting in goal that game. And so someone was whipping balls in, and I was going to feign headers, and he was catching them over me. And the last one that was hit was a little low, and so I stopped and ducked, and I bridged our starting keeper, and he flipped over me and dislocated his shoulder, popped out of place. This was, again, probably 5 minutes before kickoff on, I want to say it was on Univision. So he's writhing in pain. I'm sweating like no one's ever sweat before. I'm pleading with him to get up, and then finally Chet North, our trainer for forever and ever here, popped his shoulder back in place, and he was able to go. So so I don't know if my coaching career was up to a rousing start. We only lost that game 1-0, which is kind of at that point our closest defeat, I think, to that point. But after that, Bob Ganser was hired, and someone I still talk to at least once a month. Someone I was very close with, and he had a tough job of recalibrating the team and culture and mentality, and really moving it in a different direction. So the early parts of the league were – Ron Newman was great because the league was fun, and he was trying to get used to, the landscape of it. But after that, winning became important, and Bob Ganser had a blueprint and a mat for that, certainly, and it took some tough love on him at the beginning, and so he had to isolate himself from a lot of the players. So he always had to utilize me as someone to to humanize him and keep his personality, because which he has a great personality, you know, which is understated, and people that know him appreciate that, but people that don't, maybe not. And I could also say the same thing for Peter Vermes. Peter Vermes has a phenomenal personality. He is absolutely a blast to be around. People from the outside probably would not understand that, you know, recognize that. Same, you know, just like it'd be like telling a Salt Lake fan that Roger Espinosa is probably our nicest guy on our team. They wouldn't get it. And both facts are true. So, you know, it's so, you know, having those relationships has certainly been the highlight for me and of all the players. I mean, you know, Davey Arnault is someone I'll talk to till I'm on my deathbed. You know, I talk to Davey probably every day. If not, we certainly go 2 days without talking to each other on the phone. And you know, I spend a lot of time with my family. With in the off season, I'm usually in a player wedding, so we usually travel to that. And the players in my family have been fantastic too. They go to visit my kids' schools and their birthday parties, and it's been a blessed experience, and I'm, you know, so thankful for it.
Well, I'd have to imagine it's been so cool to know all those guys so well. Back in 2000, did you see a future coach in Vermes?
Oh, God, yeah. Everyone did. I mean, he was so Miola was our captain that year, but everyone knew that Peter was the field general, and Peter knew that Tony played best when Tony wore the armband, and that's just his personality. So, and they were roommates on the road, and the way Peter handled all that was great. But you know, he played with two outside backs that were young, and Nick Garcia and Brandon Perdue, and with a three back system, and so he'd always be to be a field general. But this is coming after, you know, spending his whole career as a forward until 2 or 3 years prior to that. You know, so he had to reinvent himself, of which he won Defender of the Year that year. And that's just basically, you know, that's all intellect. Obviously he had the ability and whatnot, but, you know, toward the twilight of his career, he based it all on smarts. And you could say Carey was the same way. Carey, who had a phenomenal career and very underrated player, was Carey Zavagdin. In fact, he was screwed not to be on the World Cup team in 2002. I mean, that was a, you know, he crushed, you know, all the qualifiers that year, and it was very unfortunate, but, you know, both, you could see both had the qualities of being a head coach, just how they knew how to react in the field. They were never out of position. You know, they knew where to be, where the ball is going to be. They're like chess players out there. And, you know, truthfully, it's, if you look at that team, you have Chris Henderson on that team who's an executive in the league. You know, and he's the same way. And Chris Klein on the other flight, who's an executive in the league. So you can see that with this Preki, who's been a coach, very successful coach in his way. So you can see the makings of all that. And I think that's what Coach Gansler really appreciated in people too. So,
who's been maybe some players that have come in and surprised you? You know, that you they came in and you didn't know that they were going to be so good or be so smart or be so funny or whatever it is.
So, I mean, so if you take the 2000 team, I mean, Brandon Perdue is probably one of the best one-on-one defenders we've ever seen. And I don't think anyone recognized that just because of the talent on that team. But basically his one-on-one defending was crazy. And I remember, you know, he had about a size 10 foot, and he wore a size 7 shoe, just to have the feel of it. So he also wins for probably the grossest feet award of anyone. But that's how. So he would never he took so much pride in every step and not sliding and always being there that's why he did that. But geez, I mean, I think the biggest surprise ever is that of all the people that have embraced Kansas City, I mean, we've probably only had two or three players that really weren't happy here in Kansas City after all those players, which is phenomenal. You wouldn't find that in any other league or city or sport or anything. You know, so, you know, you have the true leaders and you have all types of different personalities. I mean, you had Preki and Mo on the same team who had complete opposite personalities, but they made it work because they're both professionals. And that's kind of always what we had. I mean, you had the loud players like Nick Garcia, who's, you know, tries to be funny and gets the team going, and then you have the quiet leaders like Graham Zuzzi. I mean, everyone, you know, you have so many different people over the years, and it's hard to compare. But I think the common theme is the people that have worked hard here that are embraced by the fans. You know, those are the people that are great. I will say the one thing that in the recent era that you can fully tell, and I think that's one difference between us and other teams, and really a good cog to our successes. The foreign players that Peter brings in here love playing here. They love it. I mean, if you see the smiles on Nuno or Jordi Cantilla's faces when they play out there and when something good happens, it is crazy. I mean, you don't get that to other teams, and that's the culture that Peter's cultivated. Not only the fact that with our core group of guys that have been here, the Chances and the Beaslers and the Zuzis and the Seths and Ovics and these guys that have been here for a long time have certainly set that tone. But it's, you know, that's always great to see. I mean, how happy the people are to come here and really embrace Kansas City, you know, when they're here, both as, you know, on and off the field and you know, most of them who want to live here and stay here year round. So that's been a great surprise. I'd say that you know, you just don't have that in other markets. You know, you'll get a Renda player or someone that doesn't really embrace the community and the culture, but that's not how it's here in Kansas City, and I think that's been a very big success for us.
I know Kansas City is normally not the team that people look at that, you know, foreign players want to come here because it's middle of the country, it's not L.A., it's not New York, it's not Miami. But it does seem that once they're here, they really want to stay. It is that transformation that they'd go through when they get here and see how the fans are and how the team is and the culture and the whole aspect of the environment.
Yeah, I forgot to mention Roger Espinosa playing a big part in that because he really always has bridged the gap between any of that stuff and you know, he's been a huge advocate, and I know the reason why everyone's so excited to have him come back to Kansas City.
Yeah. Let's see, what other stories should I ask you for, Robo?
I mean, I think there's going to be a story that's going to come out. Jake Dancy, who was a defender here, was a very good youth player and actually had probably suffered some ankle injuries over the years that kind of impaired his career a little bit. Told a story to Sam McDowell, the beat writer of the Star, and I've told a story, but in the past too, I think it was the 1998 season. I think we were in Bradenton, Florida, and we'd all gone out pretty late the night before. And you know, we probably were rolling back to the hotel at about 5 a.m. ish. We had a 7 a.m. light training schedule the next day, so everyone got up and strolled out. Well, Ron Newman decided this is the day that he wanted to run the 2 mile race, 2 mile run for the team on the beach. He had mapped it out, exactly 2 miles, and so he lined everyone up, and so he said, "Robo, you go." You know, to the finish line where it was marked, where Guy Newman was at the time. You go by Guy, and I'm going to call your cell phone, and then you hit the stopwatch, and we'll record the times. So great. So Mojo had come up to me and said, "Hey, like maybe wait a minute or so because you know, we just got in and we don't want for the lads are a little tired." So I said, "No, no problem. You know, we got this covered." So go, you know, drive over to where Guy was and get to, you know, to the finish line. Ron Newman calls me and says, "Start the clock." I pretend to start the stopwatch and the players take off down the beach. Well, I finally hit start and so then Ron comes and drives the other rental car van down and gets there and waits for the guys to come. So Jake Dancy was the first one to come, and he was not running very fast. You could see, I mean, because you could see down the beach the guys running, and so when he crossed the finish line, I had to read the times off to Guy. He was writing it down. Well, I looked at my watch and I was like, I can't do this. But Ron Newman grabbed the stopwatch from me and read, "Holy crap, 9:18. And then he kept going from there. So he'd say, "Jake Dancy, 9:18. And then he'd say, "Brian Johnson, 9:22. And I'm like, these are 2 mile runs. These are like world record times. If you can see the guy just jogging, I must have started the clock 5 minutes late. 6 minutes, like 8 minutes, whatever it was, I really botched it. So that when the last guy comes waddling in so slow, at probably, you know, 10 minutes, Ron Newman pulls the team together and says, "Lads, you are the fastest team I've ever been around." And so we had an exhibition game 2 days later, 3 days later, and he changed the whole formation around based on our speed. He moved Jake Dancy from left back to striker, which was his nickname still to this day, is striker. And so I had to tell him, I said, "Coach, I really think I might have botched this a little bit. I really think my stopwatch is wrong or something." And so we, you know, eventually I think calmer heads prevailed and we floated back to the way it should have been. But so that's just a funny anecdote from back in the day, how things are different, you know, and That certainly would not fly today, and nor would I ever try to pull that one on Peter. So I think we're all safe that that's the case.
No, but that is pretty funny. Now you almost changed the entire formation from screwing up a stopwatch, and you took
right,
out a keeper right before the game.
So basically, I've just been a detriment. I did some good things along the way too. I think that maybe I can think of.
Well, maybe that is why they keep you to the side of the field now, though. No.
That's right. That's correct.
That's great, though. Hey, I appreciate you taking the time out to come on. I'd actually
sure.
love to just sit and trade stories with you for the rest of the day, but I know you probably got to get back and get ready for – there's a big game tomorrow, I believe, 20th anniversary of the opening day, you know, all that sort of thing going on.
Right.
Yeah, it's I might have to wear my original season ticket holder T-shirt underneath of a sweatshirt since I can't wear anything team-oriented while I'm in there.
That's right. We have to be unbiased, Dad. There's no cheering in the press box, remember?
I'm good about that. I'm very good about that.
sometimes we're not good. Behind all the media, sometimes we kind of give some silent high fives and some cheers back behind everyone. So, you know, we're definitely all fans.
Well,
we definitely have a rooting interest.
Yeah, that's for me. I mean, you know me. I've been a fan since day one. I've had season tickets since day one. The guy who sold me my season tickets was Chris Sissel, who for people who don't know, he later went on to coach at William Jewell and help them become a better program. And he's now the women's coach at UMKC. And I know you and him are friends.
I coached
yeah.
with Chris at William Jewell for 10 years. Yeah. So Chris is one of my closest friends, and he will be there tomorrow too, wearing his replica jersey that he purchased, and cheering with his with some of his kids. So yeah, he's a good one. I can those old days of, I mean, I worked with Sissel, you know, when I first started in '97, and that's when we became friends. You know, a lot of good memories from back at the very very beginning. We'll hope to replicate some of those tomorrow.
Yeah, that's because like my story is I actually was one of the later people to get season tickets because I didn't get them until like January of the year that they started. But I went to the stadium to look at seats, and Chris walked me around to all these different places like, hey, these are really good seats, these are really good seats, these are really good seats, and finally goes, oh, these other ones just opened up, and it was up on club level, and I went up and it had snowed and there was snow on the seats, and I went up and like knocked snow off the seats, and I sat down in it for like 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, and it was freezing cold out there, and he just patiently waited, and I'm like, because I just wanted to kind of get that, like, I kind of wanted to envision what it would be like, and I sat up there, and finally I'm like, okay, I'll take these two. So that was my seats until the new owners took over and kicked us out of club level. And then my daughter, who she was born in 2004, she went to her first game when she was about a month old. So for me, it's always been tied to friends, family, community, and it just keeps doing that. And I mean, I now cover the team, but it's still friends in the stands and family in the stands and, you know, friends and family in the media even. So pretty wonderful journey to be along. So from the fan side of me, I appreciate all the stuff that you guys on the team side have done. So I don't want to suck up to you, but I do appreciate it.
Well, good. I hope that shows. I hope that fans do realize that, because I promise you, there's nothing that we want more than our fans to be happy. So, you know, that's our goal and that's what we want. So.
Well, I know we. I mean, there's going to be fans who always like to complain. I mean, I still hear the Fire Vermese comments every once in a while, which completely boggles me. But you know, he's only won a MLS Cup and a couple Open Cups.
I would tell you he would not be unemployed for long, Thad. I would tell you that. I mean, we get, listen, the passion is an important thing, and so like when we lose, yes, we're gonna get tweets that say you can't spell suck without FKC. We get it. We want to win every game too, and you know, but these are also the fans that say that come back to the next game and cheer loud and help our team win. So you know, we can't. There's no knee jerk reaction from our end. I mean, you're gonna have the fans that have you know, a different mentality, and you know, we still have many of those at all. They're so minuscule, and our all our fans are true fans, and that totally trumps anything else. So, you know, thankfully, it's not something we've ever had to really worry about here in Kansas City. Well, cool. Well,
Again, I appreciate you coming on. And you got any more one last stories you want to tell, or you got to go?
geez, I mean, I have a million stories about Jimmy Nielsen, who's actually going to be on our broadcast tomorrow on air. So we're going to get to hear some Jimmy Nielsen words of wisdom tomorrow, which is good. We always miss Jimmy. He'll always be a great friend of the team here. No, I remember. I mean, I'd say the one thing and one huge difference is one preseason. We had to do things by saving costs was very important for us. And we preseason brokered a deal with Olive Garden for to eat meals there. So we have to pay for meals at the hotel every night, lunch and dinner. So for 6 weeks. We had one of three choices at Olive Garden for lunch and dinner. So we could have like a big ziti or lasagna or spaghetti. So I have not eaten at Olive Garden in the last probably 16 years, and I don't think if I smelled a breadstick, I'd probably be sick because I guarantee if you talk to Matt McEwen's of the world and the Trekkies and people like that, they would say the same thing. That was the Sean Bowers. The Digitals, who's going to be at the game tomorrow as well, they would say, "Oh my God, we have not been to Olive Garden since because we ate there so many times in a row with the same food." It's much different now, in every way, shape, and form on the staff. From our training facility, who were back then, you had to we had one shower that worked at Swope, because the shower always would clog up. So by the time that the last rookie would get in, this is in 2000, which was Peter Birahunga, the water was up to his waist. So he was showering in his used, disgusting water. So Peter was first in the shower. So and Peter Vermes was first, and Peter Birahunga was last. So if that showed you who the real captain was of that 2000 team. But there's just and you tell funny stories. And Peter Vermes tells that story 5 times a year. So hearing the same stories and talking about the same stories still is fun. To this day, it's we'll have these stories that we share for years and years and years.
Yeah, it's I've heard some stories about that building down there and some of the other inhabitants that lived in that building when you guys weren't in there.
Correct. Our pennies all had the rats had eaten holes in our pennies, and so again the veterans got to pick the penny they wanted down to the rookies. So the rookies' pennies were really chewed up, and so they had these pennies on it. Just looked like, I mean, some rat just went to town on them. So it was because we couldn't order pennies till the next year. So, I mean, there's, again, and winning the MLS Cup that year was so fun and so, it was such a beautiful day in D.C. that day and Chicago Fire. We were destined to win that year, after that crazy start getting off to 10-0-2 and then the shutout streak that we had going and then barely holding on the last day to win the Supporter Shield. That Chicago Fire team that year might be the best team in the history of MLS. I know some of the early DC United teams were good and some recent Galaxy teams, but that 2009, 2000, those Chicago Fire teams, that team we beat was unbelievable. They really were. I mean, off the bench that day was Lucas Kubik, Josh Wolf, and DeMarcus Beasley. Not a bad three to come into a finals game. But so that was a great day, and so was 2013. It was a great night, especially because it was at home in front of our loud fans, and memorable because it was so cold, and I think everyone will remember that the shot that hit the post that Nielsen thought was for sure was going in, and then just dove on the ball backwards, and then just gingerly in the PKs, and his tongue wagging, and I mean it was a great night. I mean again these are memories that I'll have forever, and hopefully our fans do as well. That's what we want to do. We always want to say we want to create memories, and we hope there's gonna be more memories to come. We certainly do, and this market deserves a home playoff game this year, and so far at 4-1, we're on our way to achieving that goal. So again, our goal is not to make the playoffs, it's to host playoff games for our fans. And so again, there's that goal does not change, and Peter and the staff and the team will do everything they can to do that. So, that's where we're headed. So hopefully, if we talk again, Thad, and 8 months when an MLS Cup is, we'll be back and hoisting a trophy.
We'll tell you what, if we go to Open Cup Final or we go to MLS Cup, I'm going to have you back on the week before we go to either one of those, and we can tell stories just specifically about those games. How about that?
Perfect. Love it. Can't wait.
And now that's like a date, so we got to actually make that happen, okay?
You got it. I'll put it on my calendar.
Cool. Appreciate it, Robo, and I will see you tomorrow. Thanks for coming on, and actually, if there's any time you want to come in and tell some stories about something, just let me know, and I will be more than happy to have you on.
Hey, thanks so much, Thad. Appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later, Robo. See you tomorrow.
Okay. Bye-bye.
From the front porch, there's a party on in here. But it's a football night.
Whoa.
But it's a football night.
Whoa.
We can gather all the friends all around and do this. Not a better thing to do. But it's a football night.
Whoa.
But it's a football night.
Whoa.
When the final whistle blows, you know we're gonna feel alright. But it's a football night.
Whoa.
But it's a football night.
Whoa.
We can gather all the friends all around the dome. That's not a better thing to do. But it's a football night.
Whoa.
But it's a football night.
Whoa.
When the final whistle blows, we're gonna celebrate tonight. When the final whistle blows, we're gonna celebrate tonight. When the final whistle blows, you know we're gonna feel alright.